Welcome, Dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day, identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised 2nd Edition, 2nd Printing, from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 282 of Heroes Unlimited. We are still in the Major Super Abilities section, and we're plowing on through the IMs, so we're about halfway through this section now, and we're on to Multiple Beings / Selves. This is the power to create multiple clones of yourself who can help you in crime fighting, multiplying your benefit to your community, multiplying your effectiveness in battle. But there's two things they don't multiply: your clothes and your experience gains. And these are the dual dumb things about this power on this page. Creating clones of yourself is a pretty cool power, and I can understand why it would be something you kind of got to nerf in a tabletop environment. It's bad enough when you're playing with a ranger who's got half the fucking creatures of the woodland following him around, taking actions on his behalf, kind of takes up a lot of table time, and the problem is multiplied if you've got not just chipmunks and adorable birds, but full-on superheroes multiplying their number of actions. That's a real problem, and one that, as is the case with most real problems, Heroes Unlimited kind of aims at, but fails to address, and instead addresses something like three steps to the left. No provision is made for how we're going to deal with the fact that in this game where a round of combat already takes a fucking hour, we're adding effectively 1 to 9 additional player characters. However, the problem of multiplying the team's firepower is addressed. Number one, quote, "All copies have the same exact skills, experience points, memory, powers, other than creating more duplicates, and physical traits as the original at the time of duplication. However, clothes and physical possessions are not duplicated. In other words, the duplicate is created totally naked and must acquire his own clothing and equipment. Of course, these will typically be provided by the original creator," end quote. So what you're meant to do to avoid, you know, carrying around a machine gun and then you multiply and now all of a sudden it's 5 people with giant machine guns. You're a dude with a machine gun and you create 5 clones and they all appear stark naked, shivering and afraid in the middle of superhero combat. And you got a handout like, here's everybody's pants, here's everybody's guns. Not at all an inconvenience in entering combat. Should be possible to just get everybody dressed, get everybody equipped, and then right on to fighting evil. Never mind that this actually makes your problem worse, because clearly the incentive then is to keep your duplicates out as much as you can. Anytime you think there might be trouble, you want them out, dressed, and armed right off the bat. You don't want to wait until trouble breaks out. With the result that when you're trying to have, you know, character building, when you're trying to like take your young ward to the strip mall to answer the age-old question of whether a mall babe does in fact eat chili fries, all this character development is going to be derailed by the fact that there's got to be like 5 or 6 more of you hanging around just in case trouble should break out. Because you know as soon as you let your guard down and reabsorb your duplicates, the GM's going to bust out a supervillain, and you're going to have to run to the mall bathroom and pop out your duplicates, take out your fucking backpack, put them all up at the changing station and get their jumpsuits on. You don't have time for that shit, so you got to go everywhere with your duplicates all out, which is just going to hog spotlight time from other player characters and ensure that you're in every scene, so that'll help. Because if the team splits up, you split up. So that's pretty bad for the team, pretty bad for the play experience. The other nonsensical limiting factor put on this power, which is bad for you specifically as the person who's got multiple beings, is, quote, "Each duplicate is at the same experience level as the original was at the moment they were created and do not grow in experience independently. Nor does the original gain any experience from his duplicates. You can merge them back into yourself and you regain their memories of their experiences while you were split, but you don't get any XP. So this is a fucking curse in role-playing game terms. If you're interested in advancing, what you basically have is the power to create a little band of nefarious naked kill stealers leeching off your XP gains as your primary superpower. Like, the bad guys attack, and you pop out all these little naked minions, and you're like, kill stealer 1, kill stealer 2 to me, kill stealers 3 and 4, go attack the bad guy. And they do it, and they jump him, and let's say they manage to, you know, double team him, and one of them gets him in a choke and brings him down. The day is saved by kill stealers 1 through 4, and you don't get XP 1 for that. It's like if you had alter physical structure fire, and some bad guy died in the ring of fire, And the GM was like, oh no, the fire did that shit. The fire saved the day. You were just a bystander. No XP for you. Ridiculous. I mean, granted, the duplicates do whatever you say, so you can stop them from stealing your kills, but you would have to give them some strange commands to do that. You know, for example, you'd have to tell them never to actually beat a villain, like help out, but when you see that the supervillain is on the ropes, like the hostage is almost saved, the earth is almost safe from certain doom, just fade out, backpedal, make way, Killstealer Prime coming through. I need you to let me in to finish the job, otherwise I don't get XP. Similarly, if you think about what actually earned you XP in this game, clever ideas, deductive reasoning, skill performance. Skill performance gets you XP. If you're a skill-heavy character, that could be a big deal. But now you got this troop of kill stealers with all your skills trying to get in there before you. You gotta yell out, don't let them. You know, it's the end of a published Palladium scenario. There's a time bomb. We gotta defuse it. Fortunately, you've got demolitions. You're like, yes, my moment. I'm gonna save the day, I'm gonna get some XP. Then you look over, fucking Killstealer 4 is already over there. Crouched over, naked, balls dangling, defusing the bomb. You gotta yell over there, Killstealer 4, cease and desist. Back up, don't touch that bomb. If you defuse it, I get nothing. Everybody back away. We got like 10 seconds left. Everybody just chill the fuck out. Everybody back away. Killstealer Prime coming through. I gotta defuse that bomb. And then you'll get your XP for working on your skill, for practicing your skill. Which you don't if the duplicate did it, even if you re-merge. Which is so infuriating. What's the point of this rule? I'm thinking of like one of those comic books that are just one long fight scene, like the Leonardo issue of the original TMNT run, where it's just like one big running fight with the foot. Let's say you send Killstealer 3 out to the parking lot to, you know, pick up shirts for everybody, because you remembered the pants, but you forgot the shirts, and now everybody's walking around bare-chested in the mall, and the security guard is looking at you funny. Killstealer 3 is out there in the parking lot. He's got your keys. He's got your little dongle. He gets jumped by somebody staking out your car, and he has an issue-long fist fight with all kinds of like running, jumping, sneaking, all this Frank Miller shit happening with Killstealer number 3, jumped by one of your greatest foes. And finally, Killstealer 3 prevails, and he stumbles back to you in the mall, all bleeding, looking like fucking Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13, limping, there's just this puddle of blood under him. And he comes back to you, and he's like, attacked in the parking lot, shirts, hands you the bloody shirts, collapses at your feet. So you're like, okay, I got to reabsorb Killstealer 3. And you reabsorb him, and you gain instantly the memory, the full lived experience of a whole issue-long fight scene full of sneaking and running and jumping and acrobatics. Killstealer was out there climbing the walls outside Sears. He was inside running from ninjas, doing fucking parkour around the play place. Now all that comes back to you. He did it with your skills, mind you, that you learned. And now you have the full memory and experience of it. Still no XP. Not one point. Because you didn't do it, Killstealer 3 did it. That bastard. This power has unlimited duration, so we could be talking about months or years of experience. You could send Killstealer 2 abroad to study in Spain, and you speak like un poco of Spanish, because you took it in high school, but you don't know what the fuck you're doing. You send Killstealer 2 to go study in Spain, be a superhero over there for a while. He comes back a year later. Not only has he not learned anything, because your clones can't learn anything, but then you reabsorb him, you have a memory and a full experience of a year in Spain, you still know exactly un chingue poco of Spanish, because not only can Killstealer 2 not learn, but you can't learn anything from what Killstealer 2 did. A whole year of your life wasted in Spain. Just the worst. Everybody uses their powers to accomplish things. And it's not like you can just make these clones all day long. You get a limited number of them. They persist over time. So like, if you can make one clone per level, then at fourth level, you can make four clones, four kill stealers, and if you lose one of them, they're just gone. The number of clones you can make is permanently reduced by one. You can lose all of them and essentially lose this power. So it's not as though you're going to be sending your clones off, you know, willy-nilly on these suicide missions. It's not like you're going to learn demolitions by sending out your clones to wander through a minefield until they learn demolitions by sheer natural selection. You can't. You'll just run out of clones. So there's really not any need to limit the XP gains in this way. And having them appear naked, come on. Not just without gear, but naked. I see where this would be fun, and it would be funny once, but if somebody's going to have this power over the course of the campaign, how many times do we need to do the scene where this person's got to duck over somewhere private and produce all their naked clones and then hand out the little superhero shirts labeled Killstealer 1 through 4 little kill stealer helmets to everybody, it's going to cease to be fun and it's going to start to be a real drag, with the result that Killstealer is just going to keep his clones out all the time to avoid having to separately outfit them every time something happens, constantly carry, you know, 4 firearms so he can pass them out to the lesser Killstealers every time there's a fight, with the result that what we're basically doing is having one guy play 5 characters, except that he only lets one of them ever actually do anything, lest his XP progression grind to a halt. Anyway, I think the author really outsmarted himself on this one, really put in some limitations meant to cover some very niche abuses of this power that ended up creating much bigger gameplay problems. Today we're discussing page 283 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the Major Super Abilities section, and we're over the hump now, we're over halfway through the alphabet, onto Negate Super Abilities / Powers. This is another one of those powers, along with something like Intangibility, where you're going to immediately understand what I'm talking about. There's an intuitive sense of it. Negate superpowers. Okay, so you mean that you can cancel other people's superpowers so they don't work? Like one of those anti-mutant collars they use in Genosha? Yes, exactly. One would think. That is indeed the effect, at least the intended effect, of negate superabilities / powers. However, the author couldn't just let it lie at that. No, the author, truly a comic book fan, if nothing else, truly a type specimen of the fanboy, felt the need to rationalize how this silly comic book power works, and that was his downfall. Quote, "The negation attack is a powerful psionic-type biomanipulation bombardment that confuses and blocks the part of the brain that control the super abilities, effectively making them temporarily inert." So, it's not enough just that you can cancel superpowers, because how the fuck do superpowers even work in the first place? Nobody knows. It's a mystery. This guy's got a mysterious power to cancel that other mystery, so fair enough. Scientists were already batting zero on this whole topic, and they're still not on the board. Instead, we have a pseudoscientific rationale. Well, you see, it's a psionic-type biomanipulation bombardment. And it gets into the part of your brain, you know, that part of your brain responsible for activating your impossible abilities, that particular part of the brain, the impossible gland that activates your impossible powers. Well, that part, as it turns out, is vulnerable to a very specific psionic attack that makes you forget how to use your powers so that they become functionally inert. With this amazing mastery of amnesia, already pretty impressive when you think about, you know, negating somebody's ability to turn into fire, negating somebody's ability to fire lightning bolts because they forgot how to fire lightning bolts. You can also do many other things. You can make someone forget how to be charming if they've got extraordinary mental affinity. If they've got extraordinary physical beauty, if they're rocking like an ultraviolet on the fuckability spectrum, you can make them forget how to be pretty by negating that gland in the brain. Likewise, if they have extraordinary physical strength, all you got to do, get up in that gland, make them forget how to be strong. They can't lift shit. And that's only the beginning. If you're up against somebody with winged flight, you can make them forget how to have wings. And by the way, yes, this does work on mutant animals who opted to buy their wings as a superpower. So fuck you, mutant animals. Fuck you, greedy bird people who tried to cheat the system and buy your wings as a superpower. If you had settled for regular bird wings and paid the BioE for it, we wouldn't be having this talk. But you made your wings a superpower. That connects them to the impossible gland, which means when that thing gets blocked, you forget how to have wings. I mean, the list goes on and on. You can make people forget how to be immune to fire. Forget how to be invulnerable. If you're bulletproof, but your impossible gland gets fucked with, you get riddled with bullets. Holes all over your body, bleeding all over the ground, and you're like, oh, fuck, I know this. It's right on the tip of my tongue. How do I... Just yesterday, I was being invulnerable to bullets, but now it's like, you know, what did I have for lunch yesterday? And I don't even have the slightest clue. It's so annoying. Blam, 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 blam. Sometimes it's hard to imagine what this even looks like. This power is so amazing. I mean, consider the case of someone who's got multiple limbs. Someone who has 4 arms, because they have the multiple limbs power. You zap them with negate super abilities, they forget how to have 4 arms. All that flesh and blood and muscle and bone is still just hanging there, but I don't know. I don't know what happens. Do they just go limp? Which arms do you lose? Let's say that you've got like a quadrilateral symmetry going on. You've got like a tube body and you got 4 arms coming out of each side. Which 2 are connected to the impossible gland, would you say? I mean, this could even be deadly. Imagine if you run into somebody with underwater abilities, underwater, in your scuba suit, and you give them a pseudo-psionic zap to the impossible gland, they could forget how to breathe water. They, a water-breathing individual, could fucking die, could drown, because they forgot how to breathe water because of you. It's just total nonsense. It's even more noticeable because of the other power on this page, multiple lives, which is where you have sort of like 9 lives, like a cat. It's not exactly 9, of course. It's a random roll because it's Palladium. But you've got 8 plus 1d4 lives, and when you die, not just when you're mortally wounded, but when you are dead, your spirit leaves your body and goes up to 100 miles and like basically forms a new you out of ectoplasm that becomes flesh and creates a perfect new incarnation of your body. After your death, after you are a deceased superhero, unless, I guess, somebody made you forget how to rise from the dead with their psionic bombardment, and then when you die, your soul just like comically shrugs and then vanishes into the afterlife. So in summary, amnesia is a hell of a drug. It can make you forget how to be bulletproof, forget how to be fireproof, make a fish forget how to breathe water and drown, and even make a soul forget how to reincarnate after leaving its physical form. It can even make you forget to have the wings that you were born with if you were like a mutant who's had wings from birth. Unless you're an alien whose species naturally has wings, then it doesn't work. Because as we all know, if you naturally have wings, that's not a superpower. Or if you naturally have telekinesis, or if you naturally shoot laser beams out of your eyes, or if you naturally have the ability to pull specific superpowers from well-cut, high-quality gemstones, you know, just as a basic biological fact, then that's off-limits, not connected to the impossible gland, therefore not negatable. But if you were born with 4 legs, sorry, buddy, 2 of those legs just got negated. You forgot how to have them. Such is the power of the mind. And obviously, that's the dumbest thing here. I mean, it would have been easy enough just to say, wings are a superpower, so if you get hit with negate superpowers, the wings just disappear. You don't have them anymore, because this power negates superpowers. The only thing that makes this more nonsensical than baseline comic book nonsense is the attempted pseudoscientific explanation about bombarding the brain. As usual with cases to rationalize aspects of superpowers, the cure is dumber than the disease. Just let superpowers be superpowers. Today we're discussing page 284 of Heroes Unlimited. We are still in the major super abilities section, and today we're discussing natural combat ability, an alleged superpower by Aaron Oliver and Kevin Sambita. Poor, poor Aaron Oliver. We've talked repeatedly now about Aaron Oliver's superpowers. It's become clear that most of these powers are very conceptually interesting. Almost uniformly, these powers are poorly implemented rules-wise. And in comparing these powers to the earlier versions of them that appeared in the Rifter, as I've been encouraged to do by people on Twitter, it's become clear that many of the problems, if not most of the problems with these powers as portrayed here, come from Kevin Sambita jumping in and fucking up Aaron Oliver's powers. For whatever reason, the interaction between these two just results in some of the worst powers in this game, because Sambita feels the need to come in and nerf powers to the point of near uselessness when they're written by somebody else. And maybe nowhere is that more apparent than natural combat ability. So here's the cool concept. Here's the patented cool Aaron Oliver concept that we don't get to actually see in the rules. Essentially, this power makes you a hand-to-hand combat savant, somebody who has a natural and instinctive ability to use hand-to-hand combat and melee weapons and to adapt to a foe's combat style. So you fight basically the way your opponent fights. If you fight a ninja, you now know ninjutsu. If you fight an alien with an alien combat style, you just pick it up. And within a few seconds, you're going toe-to-toe with them with their style. You can box with a boxer, you can wrestle with a wrestler, you can do kung fu with the Shaolin. It's a little bit Taskmaster, it's a little bit The Pretender, for anybody who remembers that show. It's a cool idea for a superhero game where there's going to be a lot of different combat styles on offer. Having somebody who can adapt them instantly, more or less, it's really cool. And having combat skill as a superpower is also really cool. There are 2 huge, disastrous problems with this power, though. Number 1, the bonuses that it actually gives you in combat have nothing to do with the combat style you copy. You always get the same bonuses. And while those bonuses are pretty nice in some ways, like you get a lot of attacks per melee, you get good bonuses to initiative and disarm, you get automatic dodge, which is very nice, you get no bonuses to strike, parry, or dodge, nor do you get any bonuses to roll with punch, and your weapon bonuses are minimal. +2 to strike, +2 to parry, and that's it. It never improves. And that brings us to the other problem with this power, the one that makes this insurmountable, the dumbest thing on this page. Quote, a character with this power cannot learn any form of hand-to-hand combat or martial arts skill, including boxing and wrestling, nor any weapon proficiencies. He doesn't feel the need to do so, and is correct. He doesn't. So you can't ever learn to be better at any of these combat abilities, which is a real problem for a character whose main power is combat. Like, you would think maybe this character really likes using a sword, or this character really likes using an axe or throwing weapons. I mean, if nothing else, you would want to learn maybe to box, right, for the extra attack, because boxing is the best. I mean, 201, basically. Every character type we've encountered that can't take boxing is the shits. If a character type doesn't let you take boxing, that is a red flag. And so it is here. Not only does your natural quote-unquote genius for combat never give you any bonuses to strike, parry, or dodge, like the key three combat abilities, and not only does it give you minimal ability to strike or parry with weapons of any kind, but it also prevents you from ever learning those abilities from other sources. Your superpower is that you are uncoachable. You are the uncoachable man. You're a marvel of science. They should have you in a lab with coaches from around the world trying to teach you how to box, trying to teach you how to wrestle. They could go for years and years. You will never learn one goddamn thing because that is your superpower. You never get better. Your plus zero bonus to strike stays plus zero. You could be 15th level. You could be a natural combat genius at 15th level and have a plus zero bonus to strike. Never gets better. You could fight bad guys with a sword for 15 full levels over a decade-long campaign. You are still plus two to hit with swords and no more. Absolutely disgraceful. Worse than no power at all. Your inability to fight is like a miracle. Even a character with basic hand-to-hand combat, somebody who learned to fight, you know, at a self-defense class, over the course of their career, they're beating you on strike and parry by 2 or 3 points, and fighting is your superpower, but you just can't be taught. You're like that horrible person who comes into a low-level university history class, having read and semi-understood the Communist Manifesto, knows one thing about Marxism, and manages to get through an entire semester and never learn one more thing about any topic than that one thing about Marxism. Just raising their hand at every opportunity. Excuse me, I just had a comment about the failure of Reconstruction. Isn't it true that factory work is exploitative? So fuck you, buddy. I hate that guy. Little did I suspect before that I had encountered the uncoachable man. And honestly, I pity the uncoachable man, as should we all. And I've still got some pity to spare for poor Aaron Oliver, who had a cool power here. But in this form, oh, it's the worst. You would never take this power. And if you rolled it, I mean, like with cloaking we talked about before, this is another one of those powers that is really more like a curse. If you've gone through the whole skill selection process and then you roll this, now you got to go back. You got to drop boxing. You got to drop wrestling. You got to drop all your weapon proficiencies. And if you've built a combat effective character, this superpower demolishes them. Your natural quote unquote genius for combat keeps you from ever getting better. And it's not going to endear you to your friends, especially because this is one of the few powers in the game that actually mechanically enforces hubris. One of the details of this power is, you think you're hot shit, you think you're too good to learn anything, and therefore, despite theoretically being a master of unarmed combat, you are basically assured to have your ass kicked by every villain you encounter from 1st through 15th level. You think you are the best, you are actually the worst, and no one can reach you. This is the tragedy of the uncoachable man. Today we're discussing page 285 of Heroes Unlimited. The dumbest thing on this page, I guess, is my own wasted education. Diligent listeners will know I was a literature major at university. It was a wonderful time in my life. Taught me many useful things. I had a lot of great experiences. I wrote a lot of stuff I'm really proud of. I learned things I never knew before. One time I was in a class with a girl who recited poetry to me, and it was so romantic, I just about fainted. But what I didn't learn was science, math, you know, that physical world bullshit, that STEM stuff that they try to teach you. If you're not smart enough to hitch your wagon to literature and just ride that rocket all the way to a useless degree. So there are a lot of things I don't know about physics, about the natural world, and that really comes into focus on this page, because this is the major super ability section, and the major super ability on this page is negative matter. This is a superpower about a bullshit exotic physics substance created by Kevin Sambita called negative matter. Let me describe it to you in his words. Quote, "Negative matter is different from both positive and negatively charged matter, matter/antimatter. Negative matter exerts a sort of negative gravity that repels all forms of matter, both positive and negative energy." Two things. First of all, despite the fact that my formal academic training is mainly in like Old English vowel sounds and the fact that patriarchy is bad, As a layman, my sense is that matter is not the same as energy. Listeners, you can tweet me and correct me on this. Secondly, though, this is hugely important for the superpower of negative matter, because this allows you to charge your body with negative matter, which causes you to repel everything around you in a way that defies physics as I understand it. Quote, bodies of positive matter and negative matter of the same weight will move away from each other because of gravitational repulsion. Connecting the two will result in continuous movement in the direction of the positive matter because the negative matter will push away the positive. This reaction, in turn, attracts the negative. This push-pull reaction is constant and results in acceleration and movement. Now, if you're like me, that's a tough word problem to follow. But the gist of it is this. If you weigh 150 pounds and you lift a 150-pound barbell over your head, you will fly to the moon. Because anything that weighs as much as you is repelled away from your body. And if you hold it, then it pulls you along somehow. It's like if you could put a big fan on your sailboat and it would just go faster and faster until it burst into flames out there on the ocean. But unless you want to go to the moon or want to set a boat on fire, either of which could possibly happen in a Heroes Unlimited campaign, typically what you'll use this power for is to push objects and people away from you. In fact, you don't even need to use it for that. It just happens. While you have the power active, little projectiles and things like bullets or just whatever's in the room whenever you happen to transform into negative matter is pushed away. It's like a shotgun blast of all the crap in the room just hits the walls. And larger objects, like vehicles or whatever, are slowed down. And people, well, see, this is where the physics are confusing. This is where I really wish that I had that scientific education, because there are like three goddamn paragraphs here about different sizes of people and how quickly they can approach you and whether they can touch you and how close they can stand to you. There are a lot of numbers here given in both imperial and metric units, which sounds like science to me, as far as I'm concerned. But then at the end of all that, after three paragraphs of running it all down, it says in a special note, quote, only characters or objects who are 50 pounds or heavier can resist the force, but even they see their speed reduced by half. So after three paragraphs of this, special note, in the exceptional case, the shocking event that your foes are not exclusively nasty hobbits, in the event that you have a foe who is over 50 pounds, ignore all that bullshit. They just move more slowly when they come over to punch you. Now, I'll grant you, up until the 50-pound mark, this power is pretty good. Your foes can't get within, you know, 8 feet of you, maybe 20 feet of you if they're quite light. In terms of protecting yourself from hobbit attack, I would rate negative matter very high. But if you, number one, want to engage in non-hobbit combat, or two, want to actively kill hobbits and therefore don't want to propel them across the room away from you and your waiting fists, you want to give negative matter a miss. Because other than that, it doesn't do that much. Now, it does protect you from being punched or kicked or whatever, and it does protect you from bullets, but heavier objects and characters can definitely get near you. Regular-sized people who are over 50 pounds seem to be able to get close to you, despite what some of these rules say, and if they can get close to you, they can probably hurt you somehow, even if they can't exactly punch or kick you. And there are very few offensive options for this power, so it's more likely to delay combat than help you win it. And that brings me to the dumbest thing on this page. There's a lot here that I don't understand. And I think that is because of my own ignorance of made-up physics. But I'm not too proud to say I'm also ignorant of a lot of real-life things. I consider the range of my inexpertise to cover pretty much the entire physical world. So maybe it's me who's missing something here under the offensive weapon section. Negative matter, it propels things away from you. The natural player character question is, can I grab something in my hand and then turn on my negative matter so the thing wants to fly away from me, but I hold on to it, and then I point my hand at somebody and I let it go, and then the object flies away from me and goes and hits them in the forehead? The answer is yes, you can. And the author of this game, upon whom we can always count, if for nothing else, then for enthusiasm for things flying and hitting people in the head, he has given us a number of categories, very well documented, of different kinds of objects that you can propel out of your hand toward your foe. These categories, I think, are the dumbest thing on this page, but you let me know. There are so many objects listed here, so many examples. A newspaper, paperclip, plastic cup, rubber ball, computer disc, pencil, pen, remote control, just everything that was around the room. I think Kevin Sabita really did like a Kaiser Soze and just like was scanning the room, imagining all these things flying out of the hands of a crackling superhero. All those things I just mentioned do 1 or 2 points of damage, which kind of makes sense because they are small objects that are not weapons, right? They're just things you would grab from around the room. They're not too sharp. They're not too dense. They're random objects, but I see where they all kind of fit together. Now, I want you to listen to this next category. This is the category of objects that, if you hold it in your hand, and you point your hand at your foe, and you turn on negative matter, and then you let the object go, and it's propelled away from you, these objects will do 2d6. Quote, a rock the size of a golf ball, metal ball bearing, spike, dart, fork, butter knife, X-Acto knife, scalpel, bullet cartridge, and similar items will inflict 2d6 damage. Despite my advanced literary training, I cannot identify the common theme in these items. Let me give them to you again. Write these down. Because I want to hear from you, dumbheads. What is it that makes these items all fit into one category in the author's mind? A rock the size of a golf ball, which is just a weird object to come off the top of your head anyway, isn't it? Not notably a golf ball. A rock the size of a golf ball, metal ball bearing, no size specified, presumably doesn't matter. Fits in the category anyway. Spike. Again, no size or composition listed. A standard spike. A regulation spike. Dart. Fork. Butter knife. You can feel the free association going here. X-Acto knife. Scalpel. Bullet cartridge. And similar items. An X-Acto knife, I mean, it's pointy on one end. It's got a blade, but that's a small blade. A butter knife has no real blade at all. Yet it's not in the previous category. Imagine, if you will, for a moment, a science experiment. Imagine that Mr. Wizard has gone insane, and so he's got two children tied up, and he's going to throw two different objects at each of their foreheads. One is a butter knife, the other is a remote control. Now, according to these rules, one of those does 1 point of damage, and one of those does 2d6 damage, which is about as much as getting shot. But for me, when I think about those two objects hitting two analogous, smooth and innocent brows, I feel like they do the same amount of damage. Honestly, I think you would need a heavy butter knife to keep up. Fortunately, I feel like Mr. Wizard, he made a pretty good living. I think he's got quality silverware, and I think if he ever needs to stop an 8-year-old intruder into his home with a butter knife, he's well situated to do that. He also knows a lot of things about acid. If you're a child criminal, don't try to rob Mr. Wizard, is what I'm telling you. It's going to be a reverse Home Alone situation, a much more grisly scenario when you flip the ages on that. It's hard to award a dumbest thing on this page because negative matter is completely made up, obviously. It has no real physics for me to know or not know, so I am at the mercy of the author. And it feels silly, it feels petty to interject like, I don't think your made-up bullshit exotic substance would work that way. Well, who knows? But intuitively, I mean, I wish I could back this up. It feels to me like this thing of like being dragged along by a thing that is being propelled away by your body. That can't be right, can it? Or your repellent force is so strong that it can turn away a physical blow of any force by any superhero. Superman can't punch you when you have this active, but a hobbit who's been into the pies and has cracked that 50-pound mark can slowly walk toward you and get up in your grill? That seems wrong, but I can't prove it. I don't have the expertise, I don't have the evidence. But I defy you to explain to me what a rock the size of a golf ball, a metal ball bearing, a spike, a dart, a fork, a butter knife, an X-Acto knife, a scalpel, and a bullet cartridge have in common that they don't have in common with a newspaper, a paperclip, a plastic cup, a rubber ball, a computer disc, a pencil, a pen, and a remote control. I don't think there is any real category here. I think Kevin Sambita listed all of the things in his apartment in order. Then he ran out and he started free associating, and he decided that the free association ones do 2d6 damage because that seems about right for the damage a superpower should do. Now, I cannot back this up because I did not learn about evidence at university, but I did learn about respecting lived experience, and my lived experience is I would much rather have someone throw a bullet cartridge at me than either an X-Acto knife or a spike. But you tell me, my ears are open. This can be like a raven in a writing desk situation. Solve this riddle, and if you can think of something, then I will publicize it on the show. I will proclaim your glory on Twitter. If you went the STEM route in school, this is yet another opportunity for you to be better than me, so have at it. Today we're discussing page 286 of Heroes Unlimited. We're still in the major super abilities section. Yesterday we talked about a pretty obscure one, negative matter, a twisted bullshit physics creation of Kevin Sambita's fevered mind. Certainly an interesting idea, I have to give it that, but a little bit difficult to convey to you, the podcast listener. Like, I don't imagine there's anyone who just listens to the podcast and has never looked at Heroes Unlimited, but I have to podcast assuming that that person exists, and it's hard in the space of one of these short episodes to sort of explain what is meant by negative matter, and then have time to, you know, pick it apart, make fun of it, cast a lot of personal aspersions at people I've never met, etc., etc. All the things I have to do in the course of regular MDC business. Today is a much easier day for me, because today we're talking about shrink. When you shrink, you get small. It's a classic superpower. Those of us who read comic books have all encountered shrinking many times. You know what else we've encountered before is the art on this page. The tiny little commando that we saw at the beginning of the super ability section, here he is again. Not only is this a day when I really get to phone it in, but it's a day when, you know, the creators of Heroes Unlimited really got to phone it in. We got some recycled art, and we've got a superpower that it's perfectly obvious how it should work to everyone, because height and weight, unlike negative matter, are real things that exist in the physical world. Unfortunately, like all facets of the physical world, height and weight also refuse to be translated into the incoherent nightmare of the Palladium system, therefore there's bound to be a disconnect, as we'll see today. We're going to be talking about shrink for 2 days. It goes on for 2 pages, and it mainly covers 2 different kinds of shrinking. The one we're talking about today is classic Hank Pym Ant-Man-style shrinking, where when you get tiny, you also get very light, and you're not as strong. So, pro, you can ride around on ants, and you can hide in people's pockets. Con, you're not going to be winning any superheroic fistfights at a fraction of an inch tall. Your strength, your mass are all greatly diminished. In fact, if you run into a cat, you're really fucked. And even if you run into an ant who, for whatever reason, does not relish being ridden into battle, you could be in trouble. Now, the first weird thing about this version of shrink that reduces your mass is that it operates with a system of benchmarks from your regular size all the way down to the minimum size you can shrink to, which, depending on a random roll, obviously, can range from 6 inches to a minute speck, the size of one of the periods printed at the end of a sentence in Heroes Unlimited, we are informed. So anywhere from doll-sized to punctuation-sized might be your minimum height. Between your regular height and that minimum height, you can achieve any height in between, with corresponding bonuses and penalties, which naturally make no sense because the Palladium system just isn't robust enough to deal with the consequences of changing weight and height. Let's take these things one at a time. Okay, number one, reduced mass. Remember, this is the version of shrinking where when you get small, you also get light. Quote, reduced mass means that the super being's mass slash weight is reduced proportional to the size. Reduce the weight by 25% for each 12 inches reduced. At 6 inches, the weight is 4 ounces. At 1 inch tall, the weight is 1/2 ounce. At 1/8 of an inch, the weight is a mere fraction of an ounce. And smaller is virtually weightless. So for various characters, all of these heights are going to be the final stop on their respective shrink trains. But naturally, losing weight at every inch you lose, there might be times when you don't want to get that small. You know, it's useful to be maybe a little shorter to help you hide. Maybe you want to pose as a child. Maybe you got a backpack you need to carry and you want to be as small as possible while still backpack capable. I don't know what your life is, but there could certainly be cases where you need an intermediate height. And there's one simple blanket rule applied to all of those intermediate heights. Every foot you lose a quarter of your weight. Naturally, this raises the question of what to do with, for example, a 2-foot superhero. Let's say that a shrinking hero is a normal human being, which is to say a 6-foot tall man, per Heroes Unlimited conventions. That's a loss of 4 feet, which is a loss of 100% of weight, which, if my math is correct, means that you cease to exist. Well, to God there is no zero, you still exist, but nobody else gives a damn. God still loves you, but you are retired from play. Now, obviously, this can't be right, because when you go all the way down to a height of 6 inches, you still weigh 4 ounces. So we can deduce, under the hilarious assumption that logic applies to any of this, that a 2-foot tall shrinking superhero has a weight of 4 ounces or over, but let's say less than a pound, right? If you lose 100% of your, I don't know, 170-pound weight, that's got to be under a pound. You basically weigh an amount equal to rounding error. So already, just by turning the height slider to 2 feet tall, we got a freaky fucking body. 2 feet tall, perhaps 6 ounces in weight. For comparison, a 4-month-old baby might be about 2 feet long and would already weigh almost 15 pounds. So you are extremely light. You are like baby bird weight. You perhaps could glide on a breeze, which is good news because I have no idea how fast you can walk or run at this size. This is a major gap in the rules for this shrink ability. Quote, speed is converted from feet slash yards slash meters traveled per minute to inches per minute. So once again, Kevin Sambita showing his mastery of geometry, of physics, and of units of measure. Whether your speed is measured in feet or yards or meters, let's just cross that out, write inches, and call it good. As though he himself had not written the rules about how fast you can run. As though he himself does not goddamn well know that speed is measured in yards, and that, therefore, when he says that, quote, 6 inches tall, speed times 20 equals how many inches per minute can be run, he is condemning the shrunken superhero to an interminable, torturous, molassic progression through this horrible world of giants. Once again, assuming that this is an average human being, aka 6 foot tall male, you go down to 6 inches, you're shrinking to 1/12 your height, but you're going down to 1/36 of your speed at 200 inches per minute. We're talking like 1/3 of your scale miles per hour, so to speak, which already aren't great because human beings are slow as hell. As you know, if you've ever tried to chase like a cat or a dog who doesn't want to be caught, humans already run like big lumbering toddlers compared to animals. You reduce that to 1/3 of the scale speed, you're going like 0.18 miles per hour. Compared to, for example, a cat who, for example, might want to eat you, that cat's moving like 28 miles per hour. What is that, like 150 times faster than you? You're getting nowhere at 6 inches tall. The question is, what speed are you everywhere between 6 feet and 6 inches? And this page has no answers for you. So at 2 feet tall, you weigh 4 ounces, you're the height of a wedding cake and the weight of a cream puff, and your speed, I guess, is either your normal speed, despite your greatly diminished stride, or maybe 0.18 miles per hour. Not just slow, but like 20 minutes to run across a football field slow. It's really hard to know where to put you in that spectrum because, first of all, there's no rules guidance, but secondly, normal speed is normal speed, and 6 inches tall is so, so slow. It's really not clear at all where to place the character at any intermediate height. Anyway, I don't know what to do about speed. What I do know with great mechanical clarity is how much SDC you lose and how many hit points you lose. You lose half your SDC when you shrink down, regardless of what height you go to. So, you know, whether you got a short boyfriend, so you decide to go down to 5 feet tall just for purely cosmetic reasons, or you shrink all the way down to the size of a period at the end of a sentence, the bodily beefiness you gained from your boxing training is reduced to exactly half. Your hit points, on the other hand, which I remind you reflect the meat and bone of your body, your internal organs, the stuff of your being, that stays the same. I want to point out just in passing that this is a classic Palladium trick where you take a question with no right answer and somehow manage to get it wrong. It's a superpower. It's shrinking. It defies all laws of physics. It has no real world counterpart. Shrinking a body down to the size of a period at the end of a horribly written sentence, it can't happen. It's already an impossibility. So if you want to tell me that, well, despite everything, when you get to that size, your boxing training is still paying dividends, and somebody repeatedly punching you in the head, even at that size, would go 10 rounds to a decision, rather than crushing you like a mini marshmallow, then sure, that's your prerogative. It's a superpower. You know, knock yourself out. By halving the SDC and keeping the hit points, though, what you're saying is that your core physical toughness, the physical strength of those guts, those bones, it's just the same. Despite the fact that you have all the size and structural reinforcement of a pomegranate seed, you're still just as tough as ever. But your like additional toughness from physical exercise is not gone, but halved. If you want to tell me that, that's fine. Or you could say, hey, you got one hit point and no SDC. Be happy. You're more resistant to gunplay than most pomegranate seeds. So suck it up. Then sure, you can have it either way, but you can't have it both ways. But here we are. Anyway, as you can see, you shrink down to about 2 feet. Your physical body is looking all fucked up. 2 feet tall, weigh about 6 ounces, either bounding along in your tiny legs like a full-grown man or creeping along at a painful 8 feet per minute. And that brings us to some miscellaneous bonuses and disadvantages. You're +6 to dodge. Makes sense. You're little. You're a harder target. You're -10 to parry large objects and opponents. Makes sense. It's hard to fence against a full-size rapier when you're 6 inches tall, let alone the size of a period at the end of a sentence. And you get a -5 to strike large opponents. Now, this may seem strange, because in terms of comparative size, your opponents are much larger when you're small, and larger things are easier to hit. So you would think you would get a bonus to hit, right? Like, if I've got a little tiny bow and arrow, or a little tiny spear to throw, like, remember when they did that with the Atom for a while? He was like a tiny-sized fantasy hero? What a weird idea. Anyway, say you've got a tiny little spear. It's not doing shit to anybody worth spearing, but at least your accuracy is good. Because it's like you're trying to throw a spear at the Sears Tower. You're not going to bring it down. You're not going to drag the Sears Tower home to feed your family back in the cave, but you're going to hit it. But no, you get a penalty to hit. And do you know why this is, I believe? It's because of the dumbest thing on this page. We've talked about how the Palladium rules don't quite handle physics. Like, part of the reason your weight is so weird and your speed is so weird is because the sliders don't really exist to put you at the place you should be, quote-unquote, realistically. Similarly, the way that SDC and hit points work are just fucked up from the start. Like, I like concrete combat mechanics as much as the next person, but hit points really need to be abstract if they're going to grow level by level. Instead, this game made them meet and tried to explain that they grow because you are physically maturing. So like by the time you physically mature to 90 years old, you're like an old oak tree and young men with axes have to team up to cut you down, like fucking Pappy from Popeye. So obviously these fucked up rules are not going to be any less fucked up as applied to a 2 foot tall adult human being who is admittedly kind of a corner case. But where the Palladium rules really fall down is in attributes. You'll remember that while attributes give you bonuses when they are high, they do not give you penalties when they are low. You got all these attributes with ratings from 3 to God knows where, usually up to maybe 30, 40. But a lot of that range is useless. Anything from 0 to 15 makes no difference. The problem with that is that Palladium can't accurately represent the drawbacks of having, for example, a low strength. So even though your strength does drop when you shrink down to 2 feet tall, depending on how you read these rules, either you've still got your full strength or it may be down as low as, say, 5. And then it goes down lower and lower and it's reduced to, it says here, quote, a mere 3 points if you go down smaller than an eighth of an inch. Nonetheless, your damage remains exactly the same, which means that at 2 feet tall, weighing it at a mighty 6 ounces, hell, let me go all the way down to the size of the punctuation at the end of a sentence, and a weight so negligible that even God is like, I guess there is a zero. Even at that size, I'm still dealing full damage with my punches and kicks. I'm not getting any damage bonus I might have gotten before from high strength, but I'm still doing the conventional damage like of an average person throwing a right hook, you know, 6 feet tall, size of a period, same damage. And so we've got this tacked on penalty to strike to discourage you from trying to go have fist fights with regular sized people when you're the size of punctuation, because if they don't give you a penalty to strike, you're going to win those fist fights. At 3 strength, no weight, and a height of invisible to the naked eye, you're going to be throwing hands at people's toes and bringing them down. Not by design, not because that's your superpower, but because the Palladium rules, despite their attempts to be comprehensive, somehow missed a trick in distinguishing between the combat capabilities of an average adult man and a fruit fly. Today we're discussing page 287 of Heroes Unlimited. We are still discussing Shrink in the major super abilities section. Yesterday we talked about the first kind of shrinking, where you get very small and also very light, and you can have whimsical adventures among the insects, glide on the wind, ride upon the puffballs, although be very careful not to get dashed into pavement, as is a possibility described on this page. It's all very magical. I tried to give it fair coverage, but today we're talking about the second kind of shrinking, the better kind of shrinking, the kind where you retain your whole mass, you retain your whole strength, you retain your whole ability to kick ass, and you gain the ability to make people say, what the fuck is kicking my ass down there? Because I don't know what I just stepped on, but it now has me in a scorpion deathlock and I don't know what to do. It's not even close. Like, this is not a matter of opinion. This kind of shrinking is the best. The author thinks it's the best, and everybody can see it. This is like fucking Tiny Jacob and Tiny Esau. There is a very clear favorite here. It's so good that it's dumb, but this is dumb in a great way. This power is ridiculously fun. I love it. Let me just tell you all the things you can do. First of all, we're starting with nonsense. I think that's important conceptually to lay that groundwork. We're starting with the idea that you can become extremely tiny, but still have your full weight and strength. This is an impossibility, and we're starting with it up front. Everything comes from this impossibility. We, therefore, do not need to worry about any bullshit about simulating real-world physics. We're firmly in the realm of comic books, and that is a fun realm to tiny-sized dropkick people in. Number one, keep your whole weight. It says here that means you can hold doors closed. People can no more lift you up than they could at your regular size. So like anybody trying to do the little like pinch you and pick you up off the ground, no luck, buddy. I'm going to grab that finger and slam you into the ground over my head like Bam Bam Rubble. Your speed is still reduced, so there's still this weird thing where you get very, very slow. That's a drawback. However, your physical strength is completely unchanged. You get an additional thing where when you do body blocks, like when you tackle people, you hit their feet, ankles, or legs, it says, you have a 75% chance of knocking them down so that they lose an action. And it points out this puts them on the ground where you can more easily attack their sensitive points. Get in that ear and go to work. This is great because I think this is actually better than a regular body block slash tackle. Not only do you ignore leverage, you subvert it to your will. Likewise, like this game is just saying yes, yes, yes to this character. Quote, ignoring the conditions of leverage, the tiny character can throw knives, bricks, objects, overturn tables and chairs, and so on. Range of thrown objects is a maximum of 12 feet. So, okay, only 12 feet. If you are the size of a mere punctuation mark and have merely average strength. If you are, you know, an academic who stumbled upon the ancient Aztec formula for shrinking, and now they call you fucking Oxford comma, and you're down there, the size of punctuation, in your little penny loafers, and you got a strength of 10 because you never work out, you can still pick up a brick and throw it 12 fucking feet. I mean, I think I could throw a brick maybe farther than 12 feet, but not much farther. And I'm like the size of the whole OED. So this is extremely generous. You still get a +3 to dodge, not quite as good as the other lighter shrinky character, but I don't see any indication here that you lose half your STC. So I think you're still at full toughness. So you don't need that extra +3 to dodge. And as if that all weren't enough, you also get a leaping ability. This is almost too unfair. This is like when you're a kid, if you've got a sibling and your parents like a little too much on your side and half of you is like, yay for me, I get all the extra cake from the birthday party or whatever. But then like there's this dawning awareness in the other half of you like, this doesn't seem fair to my sister. You begin to feel bad, and you begin to feel bad for the other shrinky guy. This leaping ability, you can leap 4 feet high and 4 feet long. Now, I've thrown a brick or two in my day, but I'll tell you right now, I'm not leaping any fucking 4 feet in the air. But this guy can. Just as out of shape and bookish as me, fucking Oxford comma can leap 4 feet in the air on legs the size of a comma's tail at full weight. I'm really not sure why. Like, air resistance? Keep in mind, the lighter one, like the 2 foot tall character with, I don't know, physical strength 5 at that size, who weighs 4 ounces, gets no bonus to leap. I mean, it's not fair, but it's great for this guy. It's great for Oxford comma. As if Oxford comma needed any more damage. He gets to keep his full strength, still gets to use his martial arts skills, no penalty to strike. Now, he's also got scale foot after scale foot in terms of like the distance he needs to jump kick. He can jump kick 4 feet up in the goddamn air and jump kick somebody in the jaw. For what, double damage? So good. Better at jump kicking than a full-size person. Amazing offense, amazing resistance to damage, given the fact that you got a bonus to dodge, you got your full STC and hit points, you're very hard to even find, you're going to get underestimated, and you've got this leaping ability. I mean, just jumping onto somebody and grabbing onto them. I mean, what would happen to you if a 180-pound man jumped 4 feet across the room and just landed square on your back and hung on? You would fall right over. Let this guy jump into your jeans pocket. What are you going to do? There he is at a very vulnerable area. What are you even going to think is happening? What are you even going to do about that? That confusion is going to lose you valuable moments. I guess finally you probably take your pants off, slump them on the ground. I mean, that's what I would do if there were something killing me in my pocket and I didn't know what it was. After slapping it a couple times doesn't work. And is that going to stop this little fucking Terminator? No. He's going to cut his way out of there like a goddamn Cyberman, and he's going to come back at you. But you don't know from where because you can barely see him. It's so, so good. Your only chance really is to stand and fight. Your only chance really is to identify what the problem is. What I have here is a little badass, full strength and full toughness coming at me. He's quick, he's nimble, he's mobile, stealthy. What I gotta do is get eyes on this little motherfucker and just go at him and just beat the shit out of him. But if you think that is gonna solve your problem, you are wrong because of the dumbest thing on this page. Remember last page, the very understandable minus 10 to parry for being, I don't know, the size of punctuation? Not here. Not here, my friend. That shit's for Esau, not your boy Jacob. There is no penalty to parry for being the size of punctuation for Oxford comma. This means you can have a full-on sword fight between a full-sized person with a full-sized rapier and Oxford comma wielding his very classy, very tiny little proportionate-sized rapier. He can fucking cross swords with a full-sized assailant and parry them at full effectiveness. Unbelievable. I mean, just think of it. You've got a character the size literally of a flea, and you've got a full-sized man maybe like coming down to like punch this guy, to fist drop him, give him the old Ted DiBiase. And what does this magnificent little bastard do? Swat it out of the way with his little tiny hand. So cool. So ridiculous, but so great. Only in tabletop role-playing, where we don't have to come up with any visual explanation of how this is possible. This parrying thing, I'm picking rather arbitrarily as the dumbest thing on this page, just because it feels more like an oversight. But this is all very much in the spirit of this little motherfucker being an unstoppable miniature death machine, and I just have to say, I love it. I love the shrink power to start with. I enjoy the Atom. I enjoy Ant-Man. I always thought the old school Atom's like white dwarf belt where he could adjust his mass was the coolest shit when I was a kid. This remains great, and the rules back up the totally nonsensical power of this character makes it even better. I would play Oxford comma. As you're listening to this, I guess I probably am a father and am taking care of a newborn and have not slept in many days and am not up for a lot of podcast special appearances, but actual play hosts, make a note, Put me in your fucking podcast Google Doc. I will play Oxford comma on your podcast. Just give me a chance. That's my to-do list. Number one, raise a child. Number two, play the tiny tenured titan Oxford comma. Number three, all the other things in life. Please be patient. I'm going as fast as I can. Join me next time as we mercifully turn to a somewhat less involved superpower, with maybe even stranger implications, on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That is ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Midair Machine, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/askagain. That's ask again, two words with a space in between. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.